Welcome to another edition of Barrel to Bottle with Binny's Beverage Depot. I'm your esteemed host, Kristen Marie Ellis. As always, is Jeff Carlin.
Peter. Jeffrey Peter.
Is it?
It is. JP. That's me.
That's a great name. Very good. So I'm going to blind you today, buddy.
But I like
on
my
some
eyes.
Bourbons. I like your eyes, too, but that's not what I'm talking about. We're going to blind bourbons to see if you can pick out the Pappy Van Winkle. Did you hear that, folks? I brought Jeffrey Peter Carlin, Pappy Van Winkle.
Take that, all of you.
You're not the only one, Jeff, that's going to take part in this blind tasting. We've got Roger Adamson back again.
Glad to be back.
I'm happy to have you. And we've got our spirit specialist, the star of the Whiskey Hotline. If you guys heard our previous Whiskey Hotline podcast, Joe was here talking all things whiskey. So here he is, Mr. Joe Maloney. Oh, Joseph Edward Maloney. I know that one.
Thanks, Kristen Marie Ellis. Thanks for having
Roger,
me.
Roger, what's
in.
Your middle name? I feel bad that you got left out in that.
Clark. Oh. RC.
I think you actually have the best name out of everyone.
Clark is pretty awesome.
It's a strong name. I'm actually related to William Clark.
Oh.
Which is ironic because I get lost all the time. Don't have a good sense of direction. Big fan of GPS. Yeah,
that's awesome. All right, cool. Well, anyway, while we're doing this, folks, there's a craze. We just got through the holidays and the Van Winkle release happened in the late fall. And it gets nuts, you know. There's only like 80,000 bottles released every year, about 7,000 cases. And you can't get it.
What makes it so special? I mean, why the demand for it?
I think it's a lot of different things. For one, it's amazing bourbon.
Yes.
Right. So the main thing is that it is actually really good bourbon. It's become the thing to get. So you have a lot of people coming in looking for that special gift. The standard people, the normal people that you would see in the bourbon aisle looking for something to drink are now joined by a whole massive horde of people looking for the special gift that they have to get their boss or they're afraid they're not going to get the
raise.
Right,
yeah.
It won't
look good.
It's just a lot higher demand. And, you know, it seems like the supply continues to be a little bit less and less because we're waiting on stocks to age.
Exactly. To meet those age statements, especially of the 15, the 20, and the coveted 23. So they've managed to very intelligently create a climate in which scarcity, right, is prevalent and production cannot possibly reach demand. And so, you know, they're always going to be in business pumping out the good juice.
Plus, it's a weeded bourbon, correct, Joe?
That's correct.
And there's not many of those around.
There's more and more coming online with a lot of the micro distillers that are around. But yeah, the traditional weeded bourbons that we had were basically, you know, Maker's Mark and your Weller. Old Fitzgerald. It's an old weeded bourbon.
So basically, guys, what we're saying is bourbon, you know, we always think of Kentucky, but bourbon can come from anywhere in the United States of America, but it's got to have a certain mash bill. Roger, can you tell me, A, what a mash bill is, and then what that must comprise of to be called bourbon?
Sure. A mash bill is going to be the ingredients list of all the grains that are ultimately fermented and then distilled. And the key component to bourbon is corn. People came here with long heritage in distilling whiskey. Corn was the grain that was the easiest to grow here in the U.S., the most prevalent, the least expensive. So if they were used to using barley back in their home country, they quickly modified it to distill with corn here. So a bourbon whiskey has to be made with at least 51% corn, but it's typically made with a higher amount than that, closer to somewhere around 70 or so.
So what does that do to the flavor when you make it with that much corn in the mash bill?
Corn definitely imparts sweetness to the bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
Some really nice flavors that then will evoke memories of other corn dishes. I know Joe loves corn pudding.
Corn
is a great descriptor that he uses in a lot of his bourbon reviews. Predominantly another thing with bourbon is you're using a new oak barrel every time. So you really want a lot of that flavor from the oak to be able to shine through.
Yeah.
So depending on what other grains you use, rye is a seasoning spice, gives a lot of that spicy character to it, some of the herbal notes.
Mm-hmm.
And then wheat actually is pretty neutral flavor, right?
Joe? Right, yeah. So that's why I think they end up being a little sweeter because it lets the corn kind of shine through as opposed to the rye showing off the spice. Now the corn gets to dance a little bit more in front.
So suffice to say that weeded bourbon is generally sweeter and fruitier than other bourbons on the shelf.
Yes, and that learning curve, and I think that's what makes it appeal to a broader audience. So some people that haven't quite developed a an affinity for some of the bourbons that are a little more austere and a little rougher on the edges. They appreciate the smoothness or the easiness to drink mm-hmm. of a wheated bourbon. I think that's a lot of the Pappy mystique is right. you can kind of jump right into the bourbon game there. And it's going to be a lot different than drinking like a 100-proof spicy high rye bourbon.
Right.
Right. Well, then some of the mystique also comes with just the kind of the general opinion of most people. You look at something and you think, well, if it's older, it's got to be better.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So having the age statements on there, which they are some of the highest age statements you will see on bourbon bottles these days, also puts it in quite a high demand.
Cool. So a little bit of a background on Van Winkle and the distillery and how it came to be. So it's named after Julian Van Winkle or Julian Pappy Van Winkle, and he was actually a sales guy for W.L. Weller back in the late 19th century, when he was just 19 years old. Weller was acquired by the Stitzel Company in 1910, and Pappy became actually the president of the Stitzel Weller Distillery. When the distillery was sold, he began to buy back barrels and bottle them as Old Rip Van Winkle. So the distillery or the brand started as a buyback brand. He would buy old juice and then age the barrels and then sell them as his. So pretty cool. And the label was introduced just before Prohibition. The Stitzel Weller Distillery then opened back up in 1935 on the day of the Kentucky Derby. Pretty fitting down there. Pappy died in 1965 at the age of 89. In 1965, then, he was considered the oldest distiller at the time. So Stitzel Weller then was sold in 1972, and Pappy's son, Julian Van Winkle Jr., resurrected the old Van Winkle brand from the pre-Prohibition glory that it once had.
They got some good names there. I mean, we've got some good names here with Clark and such, but
Ellis.
Yeah.
That's pretty good, mm-hmm. but it's not Van Winkle.
No, those are quality names.
No one's buying Ellis bourbon. No one's lining
not
up.
Yet.
No one's angry because they can't get Ellis 23. It just isn't, no. So Julian Van Winkle Jr. brings it back. He dies, and then Pappy's grandson, Julian Van Winkle III, Esquire, right? I just made that up, took over Old Rip Van Winkle Distillery Company. The Stitzel Distillery closed in 91. Before that, the Buffalo Trace Distillery had marketed their first single barrel bourbon. We know that as Blanton's in 1984. That's some good stuff, too. We can talk about that another cast. Since 2002, the Van Winkle brands have been bottled by the Sazerac Company at the Buffalo Trace Distillery as a joint venture with the Old Rip Van Winkle Distillery Company. That, my friends, is the skinny on Pappy Van Winkle. Let's get to this blind tasting, you guys. We're staring at these four little tasting cups of wheated bourbon here. And we've got, I'll just tell you what we have. We've got one expression of wheated bourbon from Whiskey Acres. We've got one from J. Henry & Sons up in Wisconsin. We've got one from Wyoming. And we've got then Pappy 15.
And one bit of disclosure, I believe that the J. Henry is actually a 4-grain, but it does have wheat.
Okay. Thanks for being specific.
Yeah.
Oh, now I'll figure it out. That's easy enough.
Oh, yeah. Thought you had a challenge for me,
so.
Joe.
Maybe not.
Keep them in order, 1 through 4, please, guys. Go ahead and taste through, nose, and make your notes if you wish. And we'll see if you guys know which one is the Pappy 15.
And I did a very similar tasting to this at one of our store tastings.
For our continuing education program.
That's exactly right.
And if you guys want to come to one of those seminars, go ahead and take a look. Either binnies.com/events, or if you just look up binnies.com/continuing education, you'll see all of the consumer education-based seminars that we have. You'll sometimes get me talking about wine. You'll get Roger talking about beer. And Joe will try to steer you right in bourbon. So what did you do during continuing education?
Well, I was going to say during the class, the fun thing that happened was that we went a little even blinder than we're doing now because I didn't tell anybody that they were wheated bourbons whatsoever. It was just, this is American bourbon, you know, which has to inherently be American anyway. But this is just bourbon. And we went through, and a lot of the people in the class were telling me how heavy the rye was in the bourbons. Nobody could
dun,
really...
Dun, dun, dun.
Yep.
Just, it goes to show that when we remove the labels and the mystique and drinking with expectations, then when we're just left with the liquid, there's some pretty amazing stuff available that you don't have to go fight for and pay secondary prices for.
Yep, and it's totally natural that what you see is drastically going to affect what you perceive in the glass. You know, if you think that something is, you know, on allocation or it's hard to find or it's very expensive, if you see that and you know that going in, you're going to make that liquid seem better than it might be had you not known that.
Perception is reality.
Absolutely. And I did a class once where I had a bottle of Pomerol, which is a right bank appellation in Bordeaux, and I took the juice from that bottle of wine, which was fairly expensive, and I switched it with an outlying AOP in the area. I switched the juices in the bottle. I brought them out to the class, and I said, okay, guys, here's the expensive wine, here's the cheap wine, and I tasted them out, and I said, let's write tasting notes on these and why one is better than the other. And everybody but one person fell for it. They all wrote these loving, beautiful tasting notes for the more expensive wine and kind of a more mediocre, kind of plain Jane tasting note for the lesser expensive wine. And then I kind of told them at the end, I said, you guys, I switched the juice. And it was silent, and it was like they couldn't understand. They didn't understand what I was saying to them. And they looked at me. I go, you guys, no, I switched the wine. So you thought that the expensive one was the cheap one and vice versa. And they were actually mad. They were upset with me when I did that to
people
them.
Don't like being fooled.
Yeah. It was a good point. It was a good exercise to show that, you know, if you have these preconceived notions going in, you are going to formulate those perceptions and come to that conclusion without being objective. So blinding is where it's at, folks, to make sure that you are truly objective when you're talking about quality, style, or just if you like it or not.
Right. That's why you have to have good company to have good whiskey.
Oh, I'm so happy you're here, Joseph.
Yeah.
Well, I've tasted, Roger, you're...
Yeah, tasted through them.
So,
Roger's a little flush, so I'm pretty sure he's tasted through them.
Yeah, yeah.
Got the old
but he's
bourbon
also
blanket
smiling
on.
More.
Well, exactly.
He's a bit more jovial.
I'm sure I am, too, because I'm, you know, of Irish stock.
Exactly,
so.
Right. Just happier, take it on the word. The cold is going to be even less so today. Okay, so any impressions of the whiskeys before we talk about... Which one is the Pappy?
I'm more of a novice when it comes to this stuff, but the number two, like super high alcohol. Like I felt like it was going to burn my tongue off almost. Like it was very, very much
okay.
A lot
two
of alcohol.
Was hot. We call
two
that
was hot.
Hot.
Yeah, and yeah. I actually wrote hot. If you can see, look, I wrote
yeah.
hot.
Yeah, good job.
So I wrote hot on that one. Number three,
ooh, yeah.
Medicinal more, and or even older. It tasted like it had more age to it.
Okay,
like there was more going on there. Four, very peppery, and kind of like a pepper spice to it. And then number one it reminded me of Christmas. Had like that mulled wine, mulled kind of essence to it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That was those were my notes. Now I'm sure Ryder's notes are much
Roger,
more.
Roger, what sayest thou?
I was pretty impressed with these. I mean...
I love all of them. I mean, I will yep. happily drink any of these.
Three definitely tasted younger to me. If I had to guess,
yep.
I would say that the third one has the multiple grains in it. It's got some graininess to it, a little bit of husky kind of. Definitely reminds me of the smell of some raw grain,
mm-hmm.
but still in yep. an interesting way. I thought two, while it was hot, was nice and complex. It had a lot going on. There was vanilla,
two is
caramel.
Beautiful, man.
There's some sweet notes, but it also had some nice complexity to it. Really enjoyed that one. Four, I thought was nice and soft, like what you'd want from a wheated bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little more nuance. It's interesting you picked up spice. That, to me, was just kind of like the most kind of easy, steady rolling one. One I liked a lot. It had a pronounced kind of cherry note to it, a little bit of corn sweetness, but mm-hmm. good interplay of kind of everything going on. But I totally dig what you laid out. I mean, I think that if more people did this, it would be a much better world.
Mm-hmm.
People would realize I don't have to constantly chase... You know,
well, and you don't have to spend $323 on a bottle of whiskey. You can spend $60 or $70 and still be hanging out with the same quality, same style, same flavor profile, and feel good about it.
And this four, like this is a fun little exercise. This would be fun to do with some friends. Stop by Benny's, pick up a bottle of whiskey, and let's taste and let's see, you know, what we think we got and versus each other. Yeah, it'd be a fun little game to do because mm-hmm. this is kind of an adventure in whiskey.
Right. I'm
well, and the
fun
thing too is unless you have really wild friends, you'll have some left over and you can start to build a massive tasting at the end of the year.
There you go.
What I think is good to remember is that everybody has different palates, and I don't think we acknowledge that enough. What ends up happening, I think, too much with the whiskey world is people think there's the one whiskey that they have to buy because that's going to be the best.
Mm-hmm.
Well, think of it with the food world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you wouldn't imply like there's just one type of cuisine that's the best.
Right.
Fresh. So, like, I only like Indian food, so forget all the other
ones. I did not expect Roger to say Indian food.
Yeah, I did not see that coming.
I did not.
Either.
No, that was left field.
Well, I knew he wasn't
going to
say it.
High flavor and high spice.
Yeah, yeah, right.
You know, I nailed
it. So there's certain people that, you know, are kind of, you know, like much more simpler, basic things. There's people that want really spicy things, really earthy, really intense. So to imply that there's just one whiskey that's going to appeal universally to everybody is kind of silly.
It's kind of really silly, yeah.
Even
yeah.
with things you drink, we're a nation of coffee drinkers. I don't drink much coffee, but I always say that everybody's affinity lately for a lot of people that are vocal, at least, in really dark roast coffees, that's totally going to affect what other kind of things you like to enjoy. If you're drinking like heavily dark roasted coffee on a daily basis, your palate's probably going to be a little different of somebody that doesn't drink coffee at all.
Exactly.
Or,
No, that's absolutely correct. And the coffee example is a really good kind of, you know, moniker as to if you're going to like strongly flavored foods or not. If you take your coffee black, then you might like that high intensity Indian food. If you like a little cream in it, then maybe you're kind of right in the middle. And if your coffee is more milk than coffee, right. then you're super sensitive and, you know, you're eating stuff off the kids' menu. That's kind of where you live.
I wish I had the understanding and palate description that Roger had over there because that was great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, yeah, that is what I tasted. Oh, yeah, no, that was perfect.
Yeah.
That totally tastes like it. Yeah. I mean, I loved the first one. That was, like, my favorite. I love that a lot. I loved all of them, obviously, but the third one was my favorite.
Okay.
I was like, I would take that all day.
Nice.
Roger, what would...
Do you think the third one is Pappy? Is that what you're saying?
I've never actually had Pappy straight at all, so I have no reference point.
Sure. But which one do you think is the Pappy? Number three.
I mean,
you gotta pick one.
Three was probably my favorite.
Jeff, pick a whiskey or the dog gets it.
I'll take one as the
okay,
one that
number
I say
one.
Is Pappy.
Okay.
That was my guess as well.
Oh, my God. What?
Well,
what? They both got it.
You guys
it.
Actually
what?
Guessed it correctly.
Yeah.
But the fun thing is, so number three was your favorite.
For my style, is like I like that hot heat.
Which was?
Whiskey Acres.
That's right. Made right out in DeKalb.
Oh, my God.
Local
you can
boys.
Actually go to the field where the grain was grown and go visit the distillery.
Yeah, they're
hell
grain
yeah.
to glass right here in Illinois.
Very nice.
Yeah, make an amazing bourbon and amazing rye.
Excellent.
My favorite is number two. It's a J. Henry & Sons. Not just because it's from Wisconsin, but I just think that the bourbons that these guys are producing are just exceptional. And it's just my style, you know?
Sure.
So I love J. Henry.
Which was number two.
Was that
number
a...
Two.
What proof was that one?
Yeah, really.
120 proof.
Okay.
Yeah, 120. And then number four was the Wyoming whiskey.
Yes, the Wyoming whiskey, which was my least favorite of the four. I don't. I'm sorry to say, but it was.
I like it.
They always say you should never change your answer. I changed my answer on the fourth one, and I got it wrong. Always use your initial
never
answer.
Oh, so you were actually trying to like line them up.
That's
I'm like
a study skill, like ACT, SAT prep. Like odds are, the first thing you think, that's the answer.
Yep.
You overthink it.
Yeah, nine times out of ten. Don't overthink it.
Unfortunately, you're not going to get the $20 gift card today, Roger.
But you know who will.
Oh my gosh, you guys are so good. This is really fortuitous that Brian S. wrote into us at Benny's Bev on Twitter, and he's going to get $20.
Because we chose him.
Yeah, love Brian. So anyway, when
$20 to Benny's, that'll buy you how much Pappy Van Winkle?
Oh my gosh.
Not much.
Not much.
Not much. But you don't need to buy the Pappy Van Winkle.
We'll give you the box it came in. Anyway, all right. What advice do you give the average bourbon drinker trying to pick up a simple unicorn like Weller 12 or 107? What do you see as being the next bourbon unicorns being? Any advice for finding the harder ones like the Pappy or the Old Forester, Birthday Bourbon, or Michter's 10, Michter's 25? So we chose this because it goes right on with what we're talking about, Brian. So hopefully you've listened to the podcast and you kind of get a few more ideas as to what you're looking for. So with the Weeded, we're talking about on the less expensive side, Larceny, of course, Maker's Mark, David Nicholson, the 1843, right? Weeded, J. Henry, which is very, very fairly priced, as well as the Whiskey Acres. What else do you think, Joe, Roger, is something that, you know, you can buy as an alternative? And also, what do you think the next Pappy Van Winkle will be?
Brian, thanks a lot for the question. I get this question a lot.
Like, sure, I bet.
And it's The way that you get those bottles, really, is they get handed out in the stores to regular customers as best as possible. And regular doesn't mean you got to spend a ton of money. You know, it just means coming in, trying different things, getting into bourbon, showing that you like to buy different bottles, and get to know the people that you shop with. You know, right. I try and pick one person and go to them and say, hey, what are you tasting? What do you like? And they can turn you on some different things. And then if they get some bottles, then likely they're going to try and take care of you, that they're seeing you on a regular basis.
Calling, you know, and yelling at Joe at the whiskey hotline is not going to get you.
It doesn't work, but it is entertaining. So keep those yelling calls coming. But unicorns, I think there are unicorns on the shelf right now. You know, we one that we just closed out was the Wild Turkey Decades that I couldn't give away at $150. And we closed it out at $100. And, you know, now, of course, now that it's gone, everybody wants it. But there are unicorns out there. The main thing is just to figure out, what do you like to taste? What tastes good to you? Because there are 525 different bourbons that we have in the store, including a lot of the hand picks. So I would look for our sticker on the bottle, because we go down and we will compare the regular item on the shelf with the barrels they're giving us. And if we don't like that barrel a whole lot more than what's already on the shelf, then we have absolutely zero reason to bring in a whole barrel, which is about 200, 225 bottles a barrel. So,
and that's the name of the game. I mean, you guys do so much research and legwork to try to figure out what is the best, you know, what's really the bang for the buck, or even, you know, what's the new thing, or what's the best of the best of the best. And you guys haven't steered me wrong yet. The Larceny, hat tip to that. I mean, that's something I tried.
Love Larceny.
And nothing, yeah. And I'm, you know, a whiskey guy. I love whiskey. I've tried tons and tons of whiskeys, but I hadn't tried the Larceny, and you came in and talking about how it's, you know, it's really got a lot of bang for its buck. For it's not the super high-end whiskey,
that's right, yeah,
but it tastes like a super high-end whiskey, and it's so good.
It's like $22.
Right, exactly. And that was one of those ones where I'm like, well, yeah, I'll try and give this a shot. And it's now one of my favorites. I mean, I've got two bottles on my bar at home, because I've got one to keep and one to share. So
cool.
One of the downsides of the Pappy Van Winkle phenomenon is that it's making people think they have to spend a ton of money to get a good bourbon, and that's just not true.
Right. No.
There are bourbons, and especially the ones you mentioned before, that Pappy is unique in that a lot of their expressions are aged longer than most bourbons. That is, costs a lot of money. There's loss over the years, the angels share. There's not a ton of liquid left, but they're still beautiful bourbons that sometimes I get this look when you recommend them, like, well, I said I wanted a good bourbon, though. Like, there's no way that this could be good. It's too cheap. And that's what's unfortunate. Like, Evan Williams Single Barrel, for example.
Always
phenomenal bourbon.
Four Roses Single Barrel.
Yeah.
Under $40. It's a go-to. I have a bottle at my house all the time.
But I think the take out of this is that start tasting your bourbons blind.
Yeah,
even ones you know and own, have your friends over and do what we just did tonight, and have somebody, you know, a friend or something, lay them out, number them, and then just evaluate them on taste alone.
Yep. That's even though you know what truest. You have,
exactly.
You're not going to know what's in the glass when they do that. Yeah.
Roger, I didn't hear, what was your favorite bourbon of the lineup?
I think probably number two.
Number two?
Yeah.
Yeah, J. Henry.
The J. Right. Henry, J. I Henry. Thought was really phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
It had tons going on.
Cool. So we got two guesses on which one was the Pappy, but our favorites were other ones that are actually available right now. So, I mean, are those unicorns? I don't know. I like them quite a bit, and I would go snap them up.
Is it safe to say the unicorn is in the eye of the beholder?
It's safe to say there is no way to pick what a unicorn is, because a lot of it is, what is everybody going to gravitate to? You know, and I'm not good at dealing with who the masses are going to decide is the best thing to go grab.
Mm-hmm.
We need to stop worrying about rarity and focusing more on if you like how it tastes.
Yep, and quality for you. Okay, really great job today, guys. Thanks for joining. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope that you enjoyed this episode of Barrel to Bottle. I know I sure did. So come on into Binnie's, and we'll help you find the bourbon that's right for you.
Yeah, if you take anything away from this week's podcast, it's to blind taste whiskey, because there's more to whiskey than just being a label or just being a brand.
Exactly. Perfect. All right, guys, until the next time, keep tasting. We'll see you. Thanks.